episode 131. Talk about that, Johnny.
Too many. Too many.
We are back in our right roles of me opening up the show and you making fun of me.
So feels right.
It does. Everything feels so right.
I do love making fun of things.
You know, it's cold today.
We tried to eat outside.
Yeah.
Do the right thing.
Yeah.
Whatever the right thing. I don't know what that even means anymore.
Yeah.
We tried to be the patio people.
Yeah.
It's a little chilly.
It is.
So I said to you, hey, it's chilly. And you go, we can go inside. I go, we can? We could have gone inside this whole time.
You did.
I didn't know you'd cross the threshold to an inside restaurant guy. When did that happen?
Last couple weeks.
Even though I told you, you've really been an inside restaurant guy for a long time.
because I have been.
Right. So you've been going inside restaurants for a while. You just didn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have only the last few weeks, but the numbers have significantly decreased. The county mask mandate is about to expire here. So, you know, I'm having a lot of interesting conversations with people.
Yeah.
Like, it's a continuum, Johnny. Like, I've read the CDC guidelines as a person who's trying to help have groups of people meet, you know, outside of the tent. Like, it says it's safer outside, but it doesn't really give you any like new litigious ways to enforce that. It still says, but if you're within 6 feet, still wear a mask and have six feet.
They're wanting people to be very careful still.
And you're like, well, so you're telling me if I'm inside within 6 feet, I need to wear a mask and maintain 6 feet, or if I'm outside, I need to do the same, but you also said outside is safer.
Yeah.
That means we have to acknowledge it's a number line here of we're all doing our personal calculus of risk, Johnny. So that being said,
listen, to quote Leslie Nielsen from Naked Gun, you take a risk getting out of bed in the morning, walking across the street, or sticking your face into a fan. You know, life's about risk sometimes.
It is. So we did decide, like, hey, you know, depending on the restaurant, and there was nobody around us today.
There wasn't.
You
know, so. Well, the waiter.
The waiter did not wear a mask.
Yeah, that was a little bit.
I was really surprised.
Yeah.
So again,
we won't name the restaurant, though. We're not going to name and shame.
No.
We don't do that here on Talk About That.
I will just say that it may not be a name that both of us already share.
We don't. We only name and shame each other.
But nobody knows our real names. So
it's true.
It's true.
How do you like
these
that?
Stage names. We have. If I was going to have a stage name like you do, what would it be? Johnny D. I guess it sounds like a country
Johnny
radio,
V.
You know.
Tim, when I traveled with Tim Hawkins, he had a buddy who was on the bus with him one time, who's just a friend of his from real life, not a comedian, which is really interesting when you see somebody's, like, who's a comedian. And this guy could make Tim laugh, like, more than anybody in the world. And he wasn't a comedian. He was just like a fun guy. He's a very sincere guy.
Yeah.
And he would make Tim just bowl over belly laugh. And it was just funny to watch. But anyway, that guy thought that he called me Johnny V. So after we did the run, he was like, man, that Johnny V guy was so nice. So Tim called me Johnny V for the rest of time. He probably would still say Johnny V.
I love it. That sounds like something Travis Wyer could do. He would always, you know, I'll never forget Clown Board. I know we talked about it before.
Oh, yeah.
But
clown board. You got to enunciate when you're in the vocal booth, vocalists.
I love that line, but what is a clown board? And then you made him a clown board.
I did.
And it still hangs in his office.
He still has it. I think I sent him that episode, and I think he watched it.
Really?
Yeah, he kind of follows my career. This is our producer that did our last worship. He's won Dove Awards and stuff. He's very, I wouldn't say famous, because he's Christian famous. He's very accomplished record producer, but he follows my comedy career peripherally. Every now and again, he'll be like, so what are you? He goes, man, I saw your new whatever. But he asked me the other day, because I posted that I was going to be on Huckabee, and he was really into that, because Huckabee's like GOP TV, so he was like, he's all about that. I think he decided that was like the moment that I became a real comedian in his eyes, which is funny.
Yeah.
So he's tell like, me, man, I'm so proud of you. I was like, all right, man.
So tell me your thoughts, Tony, about the GOP.
Exactly. While we're here,
let's just blow this up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, it is everything is blowing up around
like,
us.
I don't like either party.
It's,
but it's hard. I was telling you, it's hard to be a moderate. Like when you say you're a moderate, it's like so, because I realize you get pulled one way or the other without me, because the extremes are where we live.
Right.
Because somebody's like, oh, you just want to sit in the middle. You're excused to being wishy-washy. But it's like, no, I just believe, like, can we just be decent? Even on the mask thing. Like, hey, if you don't want to wear a mask, hey, man, that's your decision. But, man, there's a mask mandate. Just follow the rules. We're trying to get through this. But if you want to be like the guy that just wants to just destroy somebody because they feel a little bit safer than you do.
Right.
Like, I'm just in the middle. I'm like, look, yes, the pandemic is real. It's not a hoax. And cases are going down. Can we at least, like, take baby steps towards normal life again? But even that feels like an extreme position to some people.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's no fun. It's no fun being in the middle.
No, it's not. And I'm telling you, from a leadership perspective, is like, what is... I've had a lot of what I call serenity prayer moments. In fact, on the staff calls, be like, hey, guys, I call serenity prayer on that one. That just means...
You can't just say serenity now, like the old Seinfeld episode. Serenity now, insanity later.
So but it's like a... I just go, some of it's my region, my recovery program. Like,
what you're saying, though, is I can't
control
this, so I'm going to let that.
Yeah, I'm not going to control that. Like, this person's political, rage is beyond my jurisdiction. I would love to affect all the things in the world, but someone told me yesterday that when it comes to staff things, they're like, it seems like no matter what happens, even if you had nothing to do with it, you feel directly like all of it falls on your shoulders, and that's something I got to work on. I'm really trying to.
Well, even that's a form of pride because it's like you're saying, like, I have that much sway in the world.
So a lot of it, though, well, it's from an organizational standpoint, and a lot of it is, well, I mean, I am the executive pastor, so like I feel.
Oh, it sounds
let me tell you, it's a big deal, guys. but if something goes wrong. Even if another staff member, or even if we all just planned something and there was a blind spot that we didn't see, I do feel like the leaders have to, own that a little more. So that I don't like owning it out of condemnation, but sometimes I do.
There's responsibility on leaders. That's biblical.
Yeah, I mean,
you're held to a higher account.
Yeah,
you have people's lives in your hands.
Wow,
and souls.
Wow.
Yeah. Some souls hang in the balance, John. And you're farting around on a podcast.
Why are you not out working? This
is exactly what's wrong with this country.
Yeah, it is. I call serenity prayer on that one.
You're out in a tent somewhere. I was in a tent Sunday, too.
Oh, yeah,
I was under the big top.
In Kearney, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was under the big top. They had a bunch of folks. It was their 40th anniversary of it being a church. It's already an interesting church. Like, I did this church... 2012 was my first event with them, a Valentine's thing. This is my fifth event with them in the last 8 years, and they are super cool. It's almost like there's some churches that become like your second home almost. You have that kind of relationship with them. And I know we are that for a few people. Yeah. Like our friend Carlo Serrano always says, like, we're his second church, And this is that for me. But they're very interesting people. They meet in an igloo. They have a big, gigantic igloo building. So it's very odd. It's like a landmark. Where wouldn't it be a landmark, honestly?
Right.
But it's this...
Well, Alaska.
Well, maybe.
North Pole, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
It's a heck of a commute for this gig. Bring your mittens. But, it's odd. And so they get talked about a lot. Like, oh, it's the igloo church, isn't it? But they're super sweet people. But so I was I was not in the igloo. I was where they had the tent. And I was like... So that was one of the first things I said. I said... So you guys meet in an igloo, you put up a big tent. I'm starting to think you guys just want attention. This is a bit much.
Did they build the igloo on purpose?
No, they bought they acquired the igloo.
Okay.
I can't remember what it might have been a church originally. The old joke was, because they're Pentecostal, the old joke was that like it was like an old-time Word of Faith Pentecost church back in the day.
Yeah.
And the old joke was that they had their church in an igloo because the demons can't hide in the corner.
Wow.
So it's a totally I'm sure that was just a joke, but
I'm sure. Yeah. You remember that time we played in a church? It was a old Unitarian church that a Baptist church had taken over, and they had no right angles in the whole building. Remember that?
Oh,
off
right.
of Kingston Pike.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Apparently, a Unitarian
Bearden, maybe. Where was that?
It was the big Baptist church is right past campus on Kingston Pike.
And I remember this.
I can't remember.
There was a tunnel that goes from one area to the other. They have like another fellowship hall, and you go under the street to get to it.
Because they have a lot of different
cavernous
buildings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I remember just being in that building, and the youth had taken it over or something, and it was like, not like they had taken it over like a hostile.
Yeah.
The youth, there were guns. The youth had taken it over. But no, they had acquired the building.
Right.
And no right angles. Apparently it's like Unitarian architecture.
Huh. Well, I mean, they would have loved my first house because it was built in 1930. And by the time I got a hold of it, all the doors were like, slump. And it was real bad.
Need to have your house
I remember
square.
That gig, though, because that gig was, do you remember the gig?
Man,
it was for
all I got.
It was for veterinarians.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I made this really dumb joke about how, like, when I told we were doing this show for vets, I got so excited because my daddy served in Korea, and I did this, and you, like, were looking at me like, Johnny, no, and it was like a whole...
They didn't laugh at all, did they?
No, they didn't. And I see why now, but it was just a... Oh, I couldn't wait to do it.
Christian veterinarians.
They were. It's a Christian vet. Dude, that's I think that's one of the stranger gigs we've done as a band. I've done those. You can do those kind of gigs as a comedian because it's very niche oriented. Yeah. Where it's like you're coming in, you're going to do the optometry society or whatever.
Yeah.
Tim Hawkins told me that story one time. He had to do a thing. It was 500 optometrists from all over the nation. They do a convention, so he had to write like an optometry joke. And the joke he wrote was, it's one of my favorite jokes he's ever written because it's so different than any other thing in his material. It was today when I woke up, I put my glasses on over my contacts, and when I looked in the mirror, I could see my grandfather when he was a baby. The joke is so strange. It makes no sense, really, but it's still funny.
Yeah,
like,
that's good.
I like that when somebody writes a joke that is kind of almost out of character for them, and it makes you laugh so hard because you think, like, how did they come up with that? It's such a different process than their normal joke writing. Like, he had another one that he never told on stage, but he told me, and it was so funny, and it was live your life so that at your funeral, your tombstone will read, I'm standing right behind you. Yeah.
You know, your joke like that for me is the cup of tea joke.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's very dark.
Yeah, it's not too far off.
I hate when somebody uses the phrase, that's not really my cup of tea, because I realize I've just poisoned the wrong person.
Yeah, completely not where I would expect the joke to go. I love it every time.
Yeah, it's really dark. So, yeah.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah, I told that one Sunday, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, at a church service.
Oh, come on. But they've had you
anyway, let's
times.
Have communion. But it went well, and they're sweet people. But I tell you, you know, Nebraska has really low. You talk about we have lower counts. Nebraska's like, it's really low there. Yeah. So there was a low regard for the virus. Let's just say that. So I was kind of like, we had our masks in our pockets, and then we were like walking over, like, do we put our masks on? How's it going to be? We didn't see a lot, so we were like, well, if we put these on, we're going to look like we have a third head, and I'm getting ready to get on stage. So we just kind of tried to distance as much as we could and just be cool with everybody, but it is what it is. I don't know. I think they get like 100 cases a day there in the whole state.
Yeah.
Whereas we're getting like, whatever, 1,200, 1,500 cases.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'm a little worried about a spike. It is spiking in Europe real bad again.
Well, Halloween, right? Halloween's coming. That's going to be the thing. Well, if we're not down enough by Halloween and then everybody goes out trick-or-treating, is that going to be, they're going to blame?
Well, you know, they have
candy conglomerates.
I tell you, they'll do anything to make a buck. No, you know, they've come out, the CDC, and... You know, suggested like no collective fall festivals, no trick or treating.
What is CDC, John? Center for
Disease Control.
Diseased candy.
Oh, yeah. I got you. Man, it's this guy.
This guy with his
his acronyms and his funny stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing too that feeds into the people who are conspiracy people is when the CDC comes out like we have amended our. And I get the sciences of moving target.
Yeah.
But it's the whole thing of like you say with the droplets, 6 feet. Then they said it could be as much as 24 feet. Then they want to go back. It's like, if you tell me I got to be 24, we were in airports because we flew to Omaha. And the thing you realize in an airport pretty quickly now that people are flying again is there is not 6 square feet for every person in that airport. Mm-mm. It's not possible.
No. And I think that's where the conclusion I've come to this week is okay, what am I responsible for as leaders? I am responsible, one, I think, to strongly suggest safety measures.
Right.
I think number two, we as a staff, and we're going to do a better job, are responsible to model that. So we've been wearing masks at our Sunday night services the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to do that. Our kids department already did, you know, they're inside. We're going to do that just to keep people, you know, extra safe, and it's a reminder. And then three, though, anybody who... And I don't mean like they just feel. I mean, we know people who really are at much greater risk because of lung issues. We need to make sure that they have the opportunity in whatever capacity to not be in danger if they're here and to have all of the...
They need to feel safe.
They need to have it where they can be safe. And so I'm not giving away because it's not a final done deal. But we're adding, I think, a few components that will allow people to kind of choose their level of enforcement. We're going to enforce at a certain level staff-wise.
Yeah.
You know, and then on the continuum, if you need to go all the way to 10, then this is how you can do it. everyone's going to be at 5 because we're putting this, because just being outside puts us at 5 is as far as I'm concerned. So if you, but you know, if you're like 7, mm-hmm. so, you know, Johnny, these are numbers I'm making up. You
yeah,
know that.
I don't
so,
even know like, this what is that not, means. I think you should have to wear on your mask what level, like you should have be tested at like an emissions testing, like we do for our vehicles. But it should be how far you project your droplets.
Wow.
Like they make you laugh as hard as you can laugh
yeah.
or scream, you know, and then they go, oof, you're like 12 and a half feet. and good. So you have that number on your mask.
Yeah.
And now people know like, oh,
we got
and
a spitter.
That's yeah. how you, yeah, we got a spitter. That's how they know how far to social distance. Yeah. You might have somebody that's really like monotone. They're just like, I don't really know. Just yeah. That guy, you can get right up on him. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
He's not
going to. You can close talk him.
Yeah. I like that. This seems like it's a much easier system you're coming up with than what we have.
We're going to put together these testing. Say, I need a grant of an endowment of $1 billion, and we'll get this on the road.
Guys, right now, we're looking for that $1 billion champion.
We need. This is a good time to bring up our Patreon. we've got ideas, and we want to institute them, with or without your help.
I will say this. We are not lacking on ideas. So,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I got rejected on a secondary side project pitch yesterday. By the fifth publisher.
So a secondary pitch by a fifth publisher.
To a fifth publisher.
Is that like a cousin once removed or something?
Well, that's it means I have a book
right.
with Reggie as I'm, and it's like co-author. We're both writing because yeah. it's about a black man and a white man's perspective
yeah.
on race and the church and history and all those things. And about communication in particular, you know, the things that keep us from being able to hear each other. We have another book that I'd written a proposal for before, back when we really were right in the beginning of
yeah.
quarantine. And it's kind of a funny book, but it's about using proverbs in a to really look at what – it's called Judgment, parentheses, the good kind. And so I kind of like a day right. in the life of the quarantine. And it's probably a little dated, you know, now. But it was some similar things, but – a little more, a little lighter, you know, and a little more like, hey, you mm-hmm. know, hey, if you're afraid of being called foolish, according to Proverbs, then you're foolish. Like, you know, like, but making that a funny kind of, okay, how can I get that where it doesn't offend yeah. you or you realize how silly it is that you're offended by Proverbs, you know? So anyway, the idea was, well, we had some good, you know, returns on this other, we had, you know, multiple publishers.
It's
interested.
it's just like these politicians when they get like a bill passed,
pork,
but
yeah.
then they slide in their little in. Like extra, you got pork in your bill.
So yeah, my agent was like, I was like, what if we pitch this as a, you know, and so he followed up with people and they all said no, Johnny. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
Because they're using judgment. Like a good kind. good kind.
This is interesting. They're, and so you'll appreciate this. It they loved the writing and they liked the content, everybody.
Right.
I just don't have a very big platform
yeah.
for that level of publishing, you know what I'm saying, from myself solo.
Yeah.
As a co-author, well, Reggie's got, you know, hundreds yeah. of thousands of followers. And there's that, it's that interesting, I probably wouldn't normally talk about that.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting, like, just said, I don't lack in ideas, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean all of them are going to, you know, to
right.
come to fruition in some form. And this is the life that you and I probably have a little different, but we do talk about it a lot. There have been times I've pursued building the platform as good stewardship.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Because I agree with the publisher. Like,
yeah.
for me, I was like, yeah, this would be a long shot, you know, kind of thing. For,
yeah,
for
somebody's
what?
Putting, throwing in their lot with you. They want to see a return on their investment, and they're establishing a calculation of the risk of working with you.
Absolutely.
And that's fair to do.
Yeah.
That's capitalism.
If they were going to put a number on their risk on a scale of 1 to 10 on their mask,
yeah.
then it would be high risk. I mean, you know, the thing is, the idea was is that we're writing what we think could be a pretty significant book, and this could be a follow-up
mm-hmm.
that may increase the platform of that. But it's funny, though, when I first began writing, that was always the thing then.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 years ago, that was the thing. You know, well, we like this, but no one knows who you are. You know, and I was so offended back then. Now I'm like, I really agree with that. Like, anytime I get to write, I'm kind of surprised, to be
yeah.
honest. And I'm also somewhat at peace with the fact that I cannot manufacture the platform they're talking about. I could go try, and lots of people do. And for some of them, that's right. I'm telling you, I can't write 4 books a year, pastor a church, and spend that much time doing that without losing my mind.
Right.
Like, or losing something significant. Now, as I've become healthier, it might be easier now because I don't have the value.
Well, sometimes it just happens too. You can't control it. Like I think about Rick Warren, you know, I think of him as different than most of the people who like are mega church big deals. I think he's just a guy who was pastoring a church and what his ideas blew up, and now he's just like managing that. I'm not saying he's perfect, but I just don't see him as some like slick manufactured persona. I think he's like just, he had a really good idea.
Yeah.
You know, the purpose driven life. And it just like, and then he had to hire a team to manage the thing.
Yeah.
You know,
and
whatever.
Then that's kind of where.
And that's what's going to happen to you,
John. That's exactly what's going to happen.
41 days of purpose.
I'm like the Rick Warren you've never heard of.
It's like, remember the from Southern About Mary, 8-second abs? He goes, what about 7 seconds? 7-second abs. It's 1 second better.
That's great.
It's a better idea.
I do. I've kind of, though, come to the place where, and this is a funny thing for me, is I always feel like it's, as we said previously, it's all up to me. That's one of the things I recover from. It is pride. It is worry. It is me trying to control with either my worry or my work.
Yeah.
Coming to a place where this is a big statement I have to say all the time now that really helps remind me and it challenges me is the life that I have is the life that God has given me. And I don't know if I believe that a lot of the time.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes against what we're told, which is like you're the sum of your choices and it's up to you to go make something of yourself.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
That line between those two things tortures me all the time. God, what did you expect me to do? I never. So if I put it all on God, you know, like where is the line? There is a stewardship.
Right. You put it all on God, then you could get lazy. But if you put it all on yourself, it's like you think you're a self-made man and you did it all.
Yeah.
You take credit for everything.
And so like social media, building a following, and it may happen. I'm not opposed to it, but I've gone down that road some, you know, before. And I don't like the person that I become, because you were talking about last week about the scoring system.
Yeah.
Like I really am going after not relationships with people. I'm going after influence.
Yeah. Just give me your like and move on.
Yeah. Or give me your follow so that I can go convince this publisher that I'm worth publishing.
Right.
I would rather have something worthwhile to write about and be rejected at this point in life and let God deal with the platform, because to your point about Rick Warren, if God wants me to have that, it's not like he's like that. Well, I really wanted to, John. I don't know why God's from Kentucky.
That's great.
I really wanted to, but you know, you just didn't do enough.
He's gravelly. I'll fix your transmission. It's weird. Well, there is a quote that I read a long time ago when I was getting into comedy that somebody tweeted, and it really, I think about it all the time. It was better to write for yourself and have no public than to write for the public and have no sense of self.
Nice.
Like there's something about, in other words, and I don't think, I think obviously we can get too into self. Yeah. You need to have a sense of your public as well and write to serve people. But that's not what that's talking about. That's talking about only writing for this idea of like gathering a crowd around you.
Yeah.
And yet you lose a piece of yourself. And the example I would use with comedy is I know tons of comics who have an hour that kills that they hate. They're really tired of it, but they got to eat.
Yeah.
And so whenever I try to do something on stage, here's an example. I won't get too into it because then people are going to be like, you got to release this. There's a song that I wrote. It's a parody song. And I really kind of got away from writing parody songs.
Right.
But somebody came to me with this idea, like this kernel of an idea. And I was like, oh, it's too good. So I wrote it. I mean, I wrote it really quickly. And then I paid a producer to record a version of it a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And now it's just sat because I don't want to release it, even though it's good, because I'm afraid that it will go viral and then I'll be known as the parody guy. And I don't love it enough. Like, I don't love it enough to be known for that. So I'm not willing to even let it out of the cage. And it's not just fear of like failure/success. It's like, it doesn't jibe with the rest of my comedy. And I'm afraid it'll be the thing that I have to do every night now.
Right. It's going to redefine your brand or whatever in a way.
And I know that almost sounds arrogant to even say, oh, okay, I'm afraid I'll get too big. But it is a thing. I mean, I know comics who have a signature bit that they have to do every night and they're so tired of it. And I really still like my show.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I mean, there's things I do that I'm more tired of than others. And I just do, okay, this gets me from A to B. Everybody has those, but I don't have anything that I do that I'm like, here we go with this phony nonsense again that doesn't fit me. Like, my act looks like me, and I really am proud of that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and that's the way you should feel about your writing. I mean, you write for yourself, and you write for what you think people need to hear from you and what you've been given to say, but you don't write out of here's what they'll want to hear.
Yeah, no, and that, so again, one of the things I am in recovery for, as you know, as my mentor, is the approval of people.
Yeah.
Which sounds real weird to me because I don't feel that I have that, but it's become apparent. It's become apparent that it's about certain people.
Yeah.
And that actually had to do with, or certain even kinds of people. So I don't really, like, if somebody sends us an email saying that they, you know, don't like our podcast and I don't know them.
It's we
like,
get a lot of
that. It's like, hey, well, okay, sorry, no, man. You know, like, I don't lose sleep over that. And even some people I know I don't lose sleep over if they don't like the sermon or they don't whatever. But I'll lose sleep over there are some people I think close to me or in my history in ministry that I feel like, and it's all comparison, I feel like I need them to think that I'm on par with where I was supposed to be by this point, or that I haven't wasted years or energy or opportunity, or that I'm not a bad stewardship of as a leader or a bad steward as a leader or whatever.
Yeah. Or if you think somebody's out there like feeling bad for you, that gets me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I'm at that weird place where, cause
that's true pride when you're just like, I don't want your pity. I'm doing just fine.
Oh, I got all of it. Like it went from a church perspective.
Yeah.
We're not big
and
it's been an interesting last 5 years. We're way healthier, but it is a, again, Todd Wagner in our Come and See book, his Come and See book that I helped write. Sorry. You know, he said, he uses this illustration of, when you help a church begin to really change to a healthier, fully devoted gospel where community is not a buzzword, but something that's really happening and how your life is transformed. It's the equivalent. He says, people always say it takes a long time. You know, they say, well, you can't turn an aircraft carrier, you know how long takes. So he went in the book, asked a guy from his church who was like a Navy pilot or he was a Navy officer who actually had turned aircraft carriers. Like, okay, tell me. And it's kind of a funny part of the book. It's like, well, what's the wind speed and what are the conditions? He's like, I don't care. Tell me like max.
Tell me, is this metaphor true?
Right.
Yeah.
And the guy said, well, the max in bad conditions, it might take 12 minutes. In good conditions, it'll take less than 5 in normal conditions.
Yeah.
And so we use that like, hey, guys, things can change faster than you think, you know? And so since then I've told Todd, I was like, hey, I want to go back and readjust the battleship or the aircraft carrier metaphor what I believe it to be. Like, what we should have said is, because what it feels like to me is, imagine I'm trying to turn an aircraft carrier. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to convert it into an aircraft carrier at sea. And I'm trying to take all of the passengers who got on.
Yeah.
Thinking they're going on a cruise and turn them into soldiers while we're at sea under fire by the enemy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to literally convert this at sea.
It's like that scene in every A-team when they're holed up in the warehouse and the bad guys are coming.
Yes.
And they have to take all the parts and they have to make something fight them.
We just happen to have a welder right here. Yeah.
Look at this. There's an old tire.
Yeah. Like, and it's not as easy, and again, it may just be because I'm not good at it, but to the point of all that is, I'm somewhat at peace a lot of the time with like, okay, Jesus has always brought everything to my life, everything. Guys, I'm being kind of personal here, but Johnny knows all this. Every important thing that's ever happened to me called me on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go after it.
Yeah.
Every single one of them was just when I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, something better than, now I've sought thousands of things that I cannot make happen.
Yeah.
But I've always tried to commit my life to the Lord. And that doesn't mean I did it right. I'm just saying that I at least had that, you know, like, Jesus, please direct my path. You know? And my wife, you know, when we met, I thought she was like totally out of my league. And she was. We had a mutual friend. We met. That was that. She didn't think about me for like 2 weeks. She, from the other side of the state, she wakes up one morning and can't stop thinking about me. It's crazy. And she literally lies, Johnny. She lies. It wouldn't have cell phones. They weren't as abundant back then.
Yeah.
But she went and found my email address and sent me an email and said, hey, I'm just reaching out to everybody from the fall retreat and just seeing. I was the only one, Johnny.
Because I didn't get that email.
No, you didn't.
I was at that retreat.
And you were there. And I was like, wow, this hottie just reached out to me. And so, of course, immediately I'm on board for this. But that's the thing. The woman of my dreams just called me on the phone because I'm very convinced that Jesus just decided that he was going to drop me onto her heart.
Or Laura's really aggressive. And, I mean, I think we should open ourselves up to that.
It's possible. But I don't... No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, honey. I mean, and again, this job.
Yeah.
This job. We met Andrew while we were out doing shows.
Yeah.
You know, and he was the media guy. He wasn't even a pastor.
Didn't do a lot of shows, John.
No.
No, we did. We did some quite shows.
But I remember, like, he just called me one day out of the blue and said, I don't even know why I'm calling you. I just feel like I'm supposed to. I don't even have a job for you. I don't have whatever, you know. And little did I know that that would be where I would spend the next 17 years of my life eventually, you know. And then, I mean, I think about you. We were at church one day. You walk up. I mean, like, so the point of all that is if God wants me to have a platform, I mean, I'm going to work and be a good steward. Please, guys, follow me on Twitter. That'd be great. But, you know, I can't sit around worrying about that as if and not make content. If making content, I've written like, I'm saying this very, like, humbly. Yeah. I get to work so much that I'm on my 7th book in 24 months right now. And I can't even believe that. That's like as much as I did in the first 7 years of writing. And so you just go, look, stay the course and let God deal with that. And if somebody just thinks I'm not successful or whatever, then that's on me at some point. Like, who cares? Like, I'm not successful.
You don't want to build your platform on the sand. You need to build it on the rock.
However small it may be.
There's your book.
It may be a little house. A tiny house.
If you build a platform on the... That's a pier. And we know what happens to those when a storm comes, John.
It disappears. Am I right?
Wow.
Don't diss the pier.
These chapters are going to write themselves.
Chapter 7. That's good, Johnny. I mean, it's...
Platform needs to be like an acronym for... something. It needs to stand for P is for patience, and then you just go down the list.
Yeah. I can't stand books that are like real. We're going to tell you all the ways to not structure yourself into this little box, and here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Part one, P. You know, it's like they give you the box, and you're like, man, you know, give me
my box is $19.99. Yeah, they give you their specially priced box to put your non-box knife into. My favorite ones are the ones that write from the anterior view. In an ironic way, they're like 10 ways to destroy your marriage or whatever. Just, you know, you've seen those, right? How to become prideful and destroy your ministry. You're like, this seems like, okay.
I like that though. Yeah. It's really, you know, catchy. Cause you know that obviously the idea
right,
is you're going to, and the sad part is if you read it and you're already doing all those things, that's what their point is, Johnny.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember there was a CD that came out in the 90s, and it was just called, it was like a compilation of like alternative bands, and it was called Steal This CD. And I just wondered, like, do people really steal it? Like, are people going, oh, look, it's set on the cover?
Stealing, did they mean take it from the store or like take it and burn it?
I don't know. I think
back then, you know, we were burning CDs left and right.
Yeah. I remember my mom, when she heard that too, she was like, I go, yeah, mom, we're not selling a lot of units, but, you know, Christian kids, they burn CDs. They're burning your CD? No, on the computer, mom.
They're burning their computers?
She was just going back to like Nazi Germany. They're burning books and.
Oh, my goodness.
Or the fire at your camp where you throw in all your secular music.
Oh yeah, I talked about that Sunday.
You sneak back to the store 6 months later and be like, I really missed that REM record.
Oh my goodness, it was so bad. It's so funny. Yeah.
So I heard a song last night on the way home.
All right.
And it's so great, and I wanted to play it for you and get your reaction like in real time. But I will say, I don't own the rights to this song. I just want to promote this guy because it's so funny, and I know that I don't know what his following is, but I don't think it's gigantic because I'd never heard it before, but maybe some of y'all have. It's a guy named Dean Summerwind.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's a stage name. Summerwind is great. And this is a song called Parked Out by the Lake. So I just want you to hear it. I want to get your reaction in real time here. Hang on. I'm getting a call. Okay.
And I'm sitting here just parked out by the lake. If you're wondering where I park, I'm out parked by the lake. It's the lake that's 80 miles from Santa Fe. And I'm parked out by the lake, 80 miles from Santa Fe.
Anyway, it goes on like that for a while. It's really
is the bridge
great.
The same thing?
Oh yeah, it's so good. He just keeps saying it different ways. It's so funny.
This is the Linkum.
And it's such a great sounding song. It sounds like New Country.
Great chord progression. Great, yeah.
Oh, that's gosh. So. If you're wondering where I'm parked. So great.
When it's got that again, putting a city's name in is like a real, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. Wow, I like
yeah,
it.
It's one of those I wish I'd thought of. Kind
is
of ideas.
Whole, is he?
I don't know. Is I don't know the rest of his catalog. So I don't know if he does only funny songs. But
wow, that's funny.
It's brilliant. Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, Tim Hawkins and I had this idea to do a country duo, and so I sent it to Tim this morning. I was like, "You got to hear this," because the idea that I had was that we would be a country duo like Brooks and Dunn, but we would be called Braxton Hicks. And so I've had the idea for like 2 years, and we always get so tickled thinking about it, but. We got to get the songs turned out. So when I heard that today, I was like, oh, this is Braxton Hicks. This is exactly the kind of vibe that I want, you know. So funny.
That's hilarious. Braxton Hicks.
Yep. I think I'd be like, you know, Bob Braxton, and he's like Tom Hicks or whatever. That's our.
I mean, he's a better name than Tom.
Yeah.
He needs like a.
Jedediah.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's very funny. Very funny. Man, I tell you, we haven't written funny songs together.
I know. It's been a while. I was thinking about that today. Yeah. I actually, in my memories, my Indiegogo video came up from when I was trying to raise support for the DVD project. And I remember watching it thinking like, oh, some of these gags are really funny. Like, just like the way I constructed the video, I was like, I need to do more videos. I just got away from doing them. And I post a lot of like memes and tweets and things, but I need to get back into doing like, video stuff.
Build your platform.
I need to build my platform on the shaking sands of this world, John, and just hope against hope that people still like me.
You know, the thing is, I understand that building a platform is a real part of most people's lives who do. Like, I want to do it.
Yeah.
I just don't.
It's just weird when, like, a soccer mom thinks she has a brand. Because we've trained ourselves to believe in that.
Yeah.
We've been suckered into this thing of, like, well, you got to keep up the. You're going to lose followers. You're like, you're just a...
Right.
Like, why would you feel imprisoned by that? But but I really am. Like, I don't know how I'd promote a comedy show without Facebook now. Yeah. I don't know how you would get people to leave their homes and come find you. I don't know how they did it before. When I think about people who had a comedy career and they had like an 800 number and it's whatever the comedy club down the street from you would put you on the poster and people would walk by and somehow 300 people would find you. Like, how did they do it? And they're I think of being on the side of the road, like folding out a map, just like trying to find a payphone to call the club and say you're going to be late. Like, what a weird time. We're beyond lucky, but it's also a different kind of intensity, and it's got its own hangups.
Yeah, I remember in our married life, so this is within the last 20 years, which, by the way, this next week is my 20th anniversary.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And I remember Laura and I driving to the beach, and there was like a major construction detour.
Yeah.
And taking a map.
Right.
We literally crisscrossed Alabama and Florida until we made it, you know, down. And that's such a foreign concept now. No, I think it's to your point earlier about, I will say, not having a lot of importance in anybody's eyes but Jesus, which is not a bad place to be, if that's what matters the most. Not having that. The stuff I'm having to write right now, I don't know, I'm teasing it quite a bit, but you even said at lunch, you're like, oh my gosh, you're going to get the crap kicked out of you, because I'm saying.
And I'm so here for it.
I'm saying.
Because, no.
You were just talking about what you were going to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's high time someone took you down a peg.
But I feel losing some of that need for, public approval, I think.
Yeah.
Like if you feel that way, or community feels that way, or my wife feels that way, I mean, that's different, but I can identify who those people are a little more. But I don't have to have that from everybody in the same way. And there's a little bit of a, maybe I'm going to actually say something that needs to be said.
Yeah, this idea that everybody has to like you is kind of a fantasy anyway that needs to be shut down.
Yeah.
It's better to grow up and be like, hey, everybody's not going to agree. Everybody's not going to like it. Am I right, though? Am I on the right side of this?
Yeah, and again, we're going from a gospel perspective, and I've even come that way. I preached on Amos, you know, justice and righteousness is the topic of the book, basically. And because God was disappointed with the way they treated the poor and the marginalized, you know, that's what the Bible said that day.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we were back under the tent and excited, and I think we had a good time, but it was a, you know, hey, this is what this is about, and these are the definitions of these things scripturally. I mean, getting to the point where, yes, I would love for you to enjoy this, but I would love for you to enjoy more the idea that we're all open to constantly growing in our faith. It doesn't mean I have to be heavy about it or fire and brimstone or condemning about it, but I think being challenged is supposed to be a part, you know, of that. And there's that balance there, I'm sure. But I don't know. You look at the prophets; they usually weren't popular guys.
No,
you know, I mean, like they did not always. It wasn't like, you know, they did not get into that for that reason. So, and I'm not trying to be unpopular for that. You can also there's some guys who just want to scream at their people,
right?
You know, and then call
themselves a prophet.
Right.
Who are you talking? I must be saying something right. Everybody hates me. It's like, well,
yeah, maybe you're just
there's
going
a
to
lot
jerk.
Of people who are just hateful and a lot of people don't like them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real gospel is super attractive. I think it's super attractive to the life that we all would want to live, all people, because it brings meaning and purpose and grace. It brings, you know, that you are loved even though you're fully known and all those things. So, but it does call you also to die to a lot of things in your life so that you can live to the right things. And I don't know. It's one of those, like, it's I'm not there. I don't think I'll ever be there. But I do have more specific ways to now go, oh, okay, I feel that thing inside of me that wants that accolade. Yesterday, yes, I'm disappointed that publisher said, we love this book. John's platform is probably not ready for, you know, it's a risk for us. And I'm going, okay, I get it. It is. That, to me, and yes, maybe I need to, and I'm going to keep seeking those things, but as I need to, but that just means that's not what God wants for me right now.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm at peace. My buddy, John Elmore, same way. He, you know, was an alcoholic for years and runs this, you know, he helps to lead a recovery ministry in Dallas, you know, and he talks about it. I've been on calls with him because he has a book coming out. And he was just like kind of at peace. Like, guys, I know what social media does to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with my what I struggle with in addictive personality type things, I know where this leads me. And so, you know, but in the end, he got the book. You know, like it was God's timing. And then I also saw, by the way, he got on Instagram the other day. So he's finding his way into it, I think, in a healthy way.
But knowing your limitations and knowing like what your buttons are.
Yeah. Which, I mean, my last question to you would be like, is it possible anymore in the modern age? I think about this a lot. This is why I do a podcast. This is why I'm a speaker and a writer, because I'm not sure the possibility. Like, anyone who wants to say something worthwhile on Twitter right now has to say, all right, this is part one of 27.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not made for that.
Right. So, it's not made for nuance. It's made for like declarative.
Yep.
Not even open-ended, just like open and shut statements.
Yep.
It's made a very black and white world. And that's said with its own level of nuance, understanding that we're in a very like interesting time racially in our country. But I'm saying like this idea that there's no gray in Twitter, especially Facebook, even some, because you can have the comments, whatever. But it's like with Twitter, it's like, yeah, man, it's a us versus them. We talked about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of evolved that mindset more. But
can a person make, and I guess that's the experiment I'm leaning into. Like, I just don't, it's not that I just don't have the stomach, but.
Could you unplug without it kiboshing your career? Is that what you're asking me, John?
No.
You're asking my professional advice?
I'm not asking to unplug. I'm saying, look, my 1,000 followers.
This is our last podcast, you guys.
My 1,000 followers would be devastated. Wait, is it 1,000? I don't know, Johnny. Who knows how many thousands? But
untold.
Seriously, I haven't gone and looked. But, no, I'm saying can a person take an important topic or message into the modern world without doing that?
Yeah.
Like, not that you have to disengage from it. You can use it some, but I only use that to point to other things usually. Like, hey, come listen to me and Johnny talk for an hour about this. Right. Instead of me trying to write the perfect statement that's going to blow it up,
yeah,
which does get you a lot more heat, you know, in followership and all those things. But, like, to what end? I'm mm-hmm. not trying to be that. I don't want to be a shock and awe.
Yeah, it's like we're just creating somebody to get you a little, like, nugget. Like, it's a little, like, rat in the maze. Like, you're getting a little nugget of whatever. That's what clickbait is.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I don't know. I just, I'm kind of hoping people can do other mediums.
Well, podcasts are great. And, of course, it's a relatively new medium. But, yeah, if you're into whatever, then you can go find a thing that has that and listen to that for an hour, which is like social media and microblogging, which is what it was originally called.
Right.
Was microblogging, meaning you just want this little tiny pieces of ideas. And that's what we gravitated towards because we're so, you know, whatever you would call it, ADD. Our attention spans are more limited now.
Yeah.
Because of just television programming, media programming over the last few years. It's a 30-second commercial soundbite generation. And so now we get into microblogging, and now there's a generation coming up that is fatigued with micro. Yeah. We want macro. We want, I want to deep dive in what you just said. And that's where podcasts come in and, you know, longer. So, yeah, it suits me more because obviously we can talk about something without having to construct it perfectly. And it feeds that side of me that wants to expound on something because everything else I do is a very about economy of words. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm on stage, you couldn't just, well, I'm going to just go up here and see what happens.
Right.
Whereas when we roll tape, we always do. We just say, like, what are we going to talk about? I don't know. Just hit play. We just talk naturally, whatever we can. That wouldn't really work. I wouldn't have a bunch of a comedy career if I was just like, let's just. Now, there are comics who do that.
Yeah.
And some people are really good at it.
A lot of preachers do that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are really good at it, but I'm very, like, I think this feeds both sides of my personality. You know, doing the podcast and doing my stand-up act, it feeds both sides.
So you're saying I need another side.
Yeah. What about woodworking?
Yeah, well, that'd be nice.
Like making little birdhouses?
You know, I've installed a car stereo recently. So
yeah.
I told you about that.
That's the next step.
A lot of ceiling fans I installed.
What about a birdhouse with a stereo?
Wow. Yes.
You think.
And I do IKEA furniture really well, too. So
yeah.
Tiny
but that's just, but
birdhouse.
What do you mean you do it well? It's an it's kind of instruction
there's no
thing.
Words, Johnny. Like, not just I have no words. They don't put words
in the
assembly.
Well, they are, but it's just like, take the glifliflorgan. Attach it to the Schlickenflocken.
No, it's a drawing. Have you never put together an IKEA furniture?
I think I have.
It's all drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
IKEA's a little uptown for me. I get the Walmart.
IKEA's
I get the
super,
Walmart end table.
IKEA's super cheap. And the reason is
there's a lot of dowels and enclosed Elmer's glue, correct?
No glue.
No glue?
No.
It's all cams and locking.
Yeah, little locking things and dowels.
Are the tiny little nails that you got to nail the back on of stuff?
Yes.
Or the 100 nails to hold it all together?
I put together.
Otherwise it'll go, frup, it wobbles side to side.
Yeah, I put together an armoire and there was a lot of those.
That's when you know you got a quality piece of furniture and you're like, now that you've put all the wood stuff together, take this cardboard and with 100 nails.
It's just a
that's
false.
That's what's really holding it together,
it's
though, because it's holding
back.
The integrity of
no,
the left to right.
No, it's not. It's all it's made is to show you a back that is it's false. It's not meant to hold anything. Yeah, it's so that when you open it up and the clothes are hanging there, you're not looking straight through at the wall.
I'm telling you, but if you ever look at the piece of furniture and you try to waggle it side to side without that back on there, it has give to it.
Well, you're supposed
like
to.
Like a bookshelf. Like if you had a bookshelf and you don't put the shelves in, you just have that whatever that frame.
Well,
it's
not,
just a picture frame. If you don't put that back on there with those 100 nails,
no,
that thing's going to fall over like a
you're
domino.
You're supposed to anchor it all to the wall so the little nails don't matter. Isn't that
the
guys?
Anchor holds.
Come on, man. Y'all been building your platform on the sand.
You've been
not
anchoring your bookshelf to a non-stud surface.
Oh, my goodness. You've been using 1,000 little nails of your own trying to hold yourself together.
And all you needed was one anchor into the stud of, I don't know.
You have to call Jesus a stud.
I was. I guess he was, but come on. Let's.
Yeah, so. Hey, guys, we appreciate you hanging out for our biblical insight in addition to many other things today. And make sure you go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com where you can find ways to support us on Patreon. You can find all the platforms by which you can share or have your friends who have a different kind of phone than you go and listen to it. leave us comments, leave us reviews. Those are very, very helpful. And tell somebody if you like it. Like, we appreciate you telling us, but tell others as well. We always tell you that things are going well, but the truth is we think it's we'd love to see it go better. We need your help. So jump in and help us spread the word about Talk About That to your friends and family and coworkers and people around. Maybe somebody you want to introduce to some deeper topics or some lighter topics, because we do both of those here, Johnny. We do both, you know?
So yes.
You can pass it over to them. Be sure to follow Johnny as well on all his socials. Yes, I need to build mine as
well. Some new tour dates popping up. So they're starting to maybe trickle back in.
Come on.
If that makes you think that I'm out there being irresponsible and possibly killing your grandmother, don't look at the tour dates.
Don't look at the tour
dates. But if it's something you might want to come to, yeah. I've got a show coming up October 3rd near Nashville, Lebanon, Tennessee, my home where I live now.
Yep.
Capitol Theater.
Yep.
There's only a few seats left, but it's going to be a great show. Me, Brian Bates, Ed Wiley.
Mm.
It's going to be a great show. You can get tickets to that at my website,
johnnyw.com. Yep. Johnny, J-O-N-N-I-E, W.com. Right. And I'm Johnny D.
On the backup.
Drug free. So put the crack up. That's an old reference.
It is. So, it's all right.
Yeah. So, but hey, thanks for always sending us the things that you send us. It means a lot to us. And we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
If you're hearing this right now, you're probably like, who the heck is this? And why are they playing during my favorite podcast? And I get it. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to introduce myself. My name is Trevor Tyson, and I'm the host of Trevor Talks, where we talk to real people about real topics and real stories. I just want to invite you, if you love podcasts, if you love music, if you love books and love hearing from the people who create it, come check us out at Trevor Talks. Simply go to Google or Life Audio, type in Trevor Talks, and it'll pop on up. Hope you have a great day.